Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
You know, when we talk about change also with humans, when we talk about change, the first thing we think of is something's taken from us, and we don't realize change can mean something's given to you. And that's a huge, you know, these are all mindsets that once you can change your mindset, it starts, your actions start changing. You will start seeing results for sure.
Welcome back. I hope your week's been fantastic so far. If you haven't listened to my recent conversations with feng shui expert Patricia Lohan and with content strategist and writer Lacey Boggs, then go check them out. Go listen in, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. Today, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, writer, director, and improv teacher, Jay Succo. Jay has taught and performed all around the world, from Chicago to Los Angeles to Copenhagen, where he was artistic director at ICC Theatre. And Jay teaches people to build confidence and communicate effectively by learning improvisation techniques. In our discussion today, Jay talked to me about building our improv muscle to be better communicators. He explained how improv helps us to be more adaptable to change and what can be achieved by combining empathy and improv. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jay Succo. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Los Angeles in California, the United States, of course, Jay Succo, who's a professional improviser, a teacher of improv to actors and businesses. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Jay. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, Jürgen, thank you so much. I'm really honored to be on your show. I'm a big fan. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks. Now, Pete Margaritis, who was our guest on episode 309 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you. So big hello to Peter. I know he listens in from time to time.
Oh, he's the best. Peter is the best. He's the accidental accountant. And he has such an improv mindset. He's like an accountant, you know, by accident. He really is. He's got a great mind that lends itself to improv.
Yeah, and we had a wonderful conversation on all kinds of improv topics, improv-related topics, when he was on the show. And I don't think we touched on accounting at all, other than that was his history.
Right.
So when did you realize you had a passion for improv and for acting? Because I know you've got a bit of an acting and performance background.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is improv wasn't a really well-known thing when I was growing up. It wasn't like I feel today. It's taken over the world in so many ways, and it's great. I liked making my friends laugh. I liked hearing my parents laugh. Like, my dad laugh was great. It was not something that I thought would ever be a career, for sure, but I definitely enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed hanging out with friends, and it was only later that I learned what we were doing was improvising. We were just making things up and joining in on the jokes together and building things and just having fun. I didn't realize there was this thing called improv until much later in my life. And when I discovered it was my parents, when I was at my final year in university, I was 21, and they gave me improv classes for a Christmas present. They said, we think you'd like these, take these classes at Second City. And so I was driving up from my school about 3 hours every to take a class on Saturdays at noon. And it became the highlight of my week. And it was the last, I started taking classes in January and I graduated university in May. And so that from January to May, I was driving up every weekend to take these improv classes with no desire to perform. Just it was a fun, it was play. It was organized play, basically. But it was not like, oh, I'm going to make a career of this, because you didn't see it outside of like classrooms or Second City. Like it was not a big deal. So I had no aspirations early on. I just knew it was super fun.
Hmm. Did you take away any lessons in terms of, you know, this could be applied in other areas of my life, or I'm learning skills here that could apply to other areas of my life, or what I want to do for business?
Well, you know, what was interesting is the first thing I noticed was it gives you a sense of confidence. It gives you a sense of kind of stepping outside your own fears and insecurities, because you can hide by doing, I'm doing a character right now. I'm standing in front of this group of people and I'm going to pretend I'm someone else delivering this presentation. And I started noticing there were little things in my life that started improving. I started listening better. I started being more present in conversations. And that, to me, maybe I had a skill of that, but it definitely was enhanced when I started taking improv. And I started noticing this really helps me within a group. Like if you are able to play with somebody in a class that you take who you don't necessarily get along with or you don't necessarily like, but you're able to play with them in a classroom setting like we do in improv, because sometimes you meet people and you don't necessarily connect with them as you do with other people, but you learn how to play with other people. And I think that skill of learning how to work within a group definitely lends itself in the business world. And you know, we can never be good enough listeners. We can never be present enough. I mean, that's what everyone is trying to do right now. And what I've noticed with improv and business is the things we've learned as improvisers, they're starting to say those same kind of things, but phrase it a little bit differently. So they might, instead of saying like be present, which we say in improv, a business term might be here now. Or in improv, it's, you know, we want you to come into the scene and bring your experiences. In business, it might say bring your whole self to work. And even the phrase yes and, which is the bedrock of improv, has started seeping into the business culture. And so it's really amazing to see those same terms and you go, oh, what you're saying there, it means this in improv. And they're the same, because it's like in improv, you have to work together no matter who you are. Even if you're a one-person shop, you still have to work with clients, you have to work with vendors, you have to find a way to work, you have to find a way to make people feel like they've been heard. And that's the biggest thing right now in business is, are your clients, are your customers, are your employees, do they feel like they are being heard? And improv, the foundation is yes and yes is yes, I hear you. Like that's the first part of it, is I hear you. And that to me is the biggest takeaway, is you're with people who feel like their voice is heard. And we don't always, a lot of times in business, as you know, it's loudest voice in the room wins a lot of times. And you don't get, but the people that are quiet, what you learn when you improvise is those quiet people are listening a lot and they come up with the best lines because they're sitting back listening. And improv, you have to leave room for everyone's voices. Everyone's voices have to be heard. That's what makes the group strong.
Yeah, I love that. And there's so much in what you said there. I remember way back in my corporate days, and there was some team training, and the idea of using the yes and came up, and it didn't, you know, there was no connection made to improv or anything, but it was just, you know, it makes sense to say if somebody brings up an idea and the first thing you say is but.
Yeah,
it kind of that word immediately dismisses the idea, even, and whatever you say after that doesn't really contribute to a conversation. It really only says that I've got a different view. I've dismissed your view with this word, but Whereas if it's the idea of the yes and is, as you say, giving the person a feeling that they're heard and building on what they've said. So it kind of, it's a contribution rather than a dismissal and change of direction.
Well, and isn't that what we're really looking for, is to bridge that communication gap? And we're looking for that. And you're right, that word, but, you know, even if it's fronted with yes, if you have a yes, but, it's almost worse than a no, because you're setting someone's hopes up and then you hit them with that follow-up of the but, which it's a little bit passive aggressive at times. Now, when we talk about using yes and in the business culture, it's really about that philosophy, right? It's about being open. It's not necessarily, I'm going to say yes to everything. It's not like blank agreement. It's more like, let me hear what you have to say and how can it work? And that's the big thing, is we have to say yes. You have to say, if you say no to your clients, if you say no to your manager, if you say no to the people who work for you, if you say no to your significant other, those relationships are going to end very quickly if you keep saying no. But if you say to them, I hear you, and yes, and wait a minute, before I dismiss it, how can that work? I think that's a very powerful tool. And then when you have to say no, or you have to say but, it has a bigger weight to it than if you just immediately are the person that says but, or that says no. Like, imagine the times that people have interrupted you, or we've interrupted other people with but. They're not even finished with their sentence and we've already cut them off with a but. And it's like, you can't, what I've learned in improv is I can't effectively communicate with you until I hear, not just hear the words you're saying, all of them, but I have to hear how you're saying them. Because the way you say it, that means more than the words themselves. We are, you know, we remember the things people do and how they make us feel rather than what they say to us. So we have to not just hear the words, but how people say it as well. And I think that's one of the great things for improv, is you're able to start adding that to your skill set of, let me wait until you are completely finished, because then I can make a more accurate response. And we say in improv, you know, there's a difference between waiting to talk and listening in order to respond. And I think those are two definite skill sets of, like, let me listen to what you're saying and then wait till you're finished completely before I respond, versus as soon as you're done talking, I'm going to get my thought, my agenda, I'm going to push that in right away.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And I think it comes back to the idea of active listening versus, it's not passive listening, but having, like, formulating the next thing you're going to say in your mind while the other person's talking. So you're not actually listening to what they're saying, not actively listening to what they're saying, because what's going on is you're inside your own head thinking, what's my next thing that I want to say? And in some ways, the yes and thing versus the yes but is, you've already been formulating that in your mind, because the but is what I'm going to say next, and it's my argument against whatever it was that you said. Whereas the yes and is, I've got to be thinking, it's a different mindset. I've got to be thinking about what you said in order to tack on the and.
I mean, my friends from Toronto say a yes but is a Canadian no. It's very polite, but it's still the no. And you know, this all boils down to me with fear. I have a fear of, I won't know what to say. I have a fear of, I'm not sure what the answer is going to be. I have a fear of looking foolish. I have a fear that this conversation is going to be a competition that I'm going to lose. So we have all those fear-based thoughts in our mind. And if we can allow ourselves to just take a moment and go, let me hear what Jürgen has to say, because it might, the last word of your sentence might change everything. And if I'm holding on to that moment of, you said something early on in the sentence, I'm already, like you said, I'm formulating my response. So I've stopped listening to what you're saying, because I want to get my point across. And sometimes we look at conversations like there's a point total, like we're in a competition. I got to win this conversation. So I'm going to say X, Y, and Z. And it's like, great. So great, you won. Now what? How did you make them feel? Nobody's going to walk away from a conversation and go, You know what Jürgen did? He listened to every word I said. How dare he do that? How dare he value me that much and that he wanted me to completely finish? And a lot of us as humans, we don't speak, you know, think about how you have conversations. You don't speak with like headlines. You don't go, all right, here's my thing. Sometimes we couch it. Sometimes we have small talk at the beginning and the meat of our conversation, the what we want to say, isn't at the very front end of it. So if we're already formulating responses, we're missing the entire point of that, what that conversation is, because we don't have all that information. So if you can wait until somebody's completely finished and even take a moment, you're going to make a better, more effective response than if you already shut them off because you already know what you want to say to them as soon as they start their conversation.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, in a team environment, then, you do a lot of training of and based on improv. So in a team environment, how do you create that safe space to allow people to take on different roles, to allow, for example, what you said earlier, the people who are normally the quiet ones and perhaps railroaded by those that are more noisy or more outspoken? How do you create that safe space where everybody feels as though their voice is valued and they can play whatever role that they'd like to play in that improv game, and then take that lesson on to their usual interactions?
Well, great question. The challenge for me when I facilitate and I teach improv, as far as using philosophies to help with, you know, how you can apply that, take it from theory to like real life, the challenge always has been, it's a muscle you have to keep working. So people come out of workshops a lot of times and they're feeling great about it and they're seeing the value of it and it's working. But then what do you do 3 days later? What do you do a month later? When you're with people who didn't take that workshop and who aren't playing by those same rules, right? So part of this is, how do you keep flexing and working that muscle? How do you keep working that, which might be new to some people? It might be like, great, I love this philosophy, I love this idea, but unless you're constantly working at it, it's like a muscle that might atrophy. So I think in an initial setting, what you do is it's like any meeting, you set the ground rules at the top. You set the agenda at the top. As the facilitator, you're constantly reminding your group, hey, here's what we're going to be doing today. And you say things like, this might make you feel uncomfortable. You say things like, we're going to ask people to take on different roles. If you're someone who is a leader, we're going to ask you to step back. And if you're somebody who is shy to share your voice, we want to leave room for you to share your voice. It's something that the whole group has to do. The group has to buy into that. And so as a facilitator, I can also leave space for that. And especially what's interesting is the transition now to doing more virtual training, because virtual training is a whole nother ball game that there are so many other distractions. You are more vulnerable because you are inviting people into your homes. You've got kids you're trying to probably virtual school, and you've got pets, and maybe you haven't done your laundry. And so you've got that space as well. So what I like to do is I like to set it up top to let people know, here's what we're going to be doing today. But then there are after exercises are done, I'll say, we're going to pause here to hear from people we haven't heard from yet. And it's that silence can be really uncomfortable, and we want to fill the silence. And so we want to jump right in because we get uncomfortable with silence. But my experience is, if you leave an extra beat, an extra moment of silence, there are a lot of times that people feel comfortable speaking up in that moment. So it's not just inviting the people to speak up, it's also leaving space for them and making it a place where they can share their voice. And as you get experience facilitating, you start noticing who those people are who will dominate the conversation. And it's a fun challenge to be like, how do I satisfy, because it comes down to human need. How do I satisfy what their need is versus someone else who isn't as loud and their need? And you're managing those egos along the way. So I think what you can do is at certain moments in that communication, in that learning session, you can pause and say, we're going to leave some space here. And you can do that a couple times during the session. And you'll be amazed that when you have that space, people will, who don't normally, they will speak up at that moment. And if it's, and if they don't, it's okay to take a breath. It's very scary. We are very afraid of silence. And silence, what it does is it builds anticipation. It leaves room for people to digest the information. There are a lot of training sessions where you have a PowerPoint slide with, you know, you've got 40 slides in your deck. You want to get through all of them. Your slides are, I mean, it's 8-point font and you're cramming all this information. And humans cannot absorb that much information. They can't. It's just impossible. But you leave the session and you say to yourself, I did my job, which is absolutely true. But did you, were you effective in communicating that to the people who were there? And so I think you leave some space at times, which is of more value to me, to leave that space, to make sure we hear everyone's voice. And that goes back to my improv training, which is, you know, we're in this together. And I was trained early on at one improv theater, do your part or the tribe dies. And that's how we took it that seriously, of like, what's my role in this show tonight? I'm the person who does this because that's what this show needs. So we were really focused outside of ourselves and we were focused on what the group was doing as a collective. And so I think we're seeing the value in that ensemble right now, especially in business, especially in the times we're in right now. We need more of that support. We need to be able to rely and trust each other. And it's not just trusting other people, but it's you yourself being trustworthy. Those are two big elements to this.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to unpack there. And I love the idea of everyone in the tribe has to do their job, otherwise the tribe doesn't survive. And that's a real big message to take into any team, isn't it? And doing it in a way that everyone's supporting everyone else, having that philosophy.
I mean, we spend a lot of time with our own stuff, whether it's working in silos or imagine if all you had to bring to the table was 80% of a solution, and then you relied on your team to give you the other 20%. I mean, instead of you yourself having to do it all. So relying on those people around you and giving them space to grow and space to use their voice. And with that also space to fail and learn. And we don't do that as much as we should, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great philosophy, you know, giving people the space to learn. And by definition, that means they have to have the space to fail because, there's lessons in failure.
Yeah. How much you learn so much more from the failures. And also sometimes the failures turn into gifts. I mean, look at penicillin. Look at penicillin. I mean, that was a failure that then they went, wait, we could use this for something else. I mean, there's so many examples of things that were failures. And
post-it notes.
Right. Post-it. Exactly. Exactly. Post-it notes, the same thing. Yeah. We think failures mean we are a failure. That's the way humans are. We're very emotional. So we think I'm a failure if I fail. And it's like, no, you're not a failure. But if you have leadership who embraces that, and it trickles, you know, it comes down that way, that's a company that thrives. But when you don't embrace that leadership, you know, if you have leadership that doesn't embrace that role, that looks at everything is like, we're white knuckling everything, there's no room for failure, that eventually is going to die.
Okay. Now you talked a little bit earlier about presentation and the trend that some people have to bombard people with information when they're presenting. What are some of the lessons to take in? Like, one of them obviously is the silence and the pause and giving space. But what are some of the other lessons to take into presentations, particularly in this day and age when a lot of them are online?
Yeah, it's similar in a lot of ways, but it's also very different, virtual versus live in a room with people. But in both of them, you can start noticing body language, start giving a moment for people to digest your information. When you're delivering virtually, don't forget to, you know, it's a simple thing, like, don't forget to look into the camera. A lot of times we're looking away, we're looking at our screen because that's where our notes are, but look into the camera. Limit what you put what information is needed for the slide. When you're virtually presenting, it's a little bit different because I think people need some information visually for what you're talking about. But definitely you shouldn't use the slide as something you're just going to read verbatim. I think virtually what can help with your slides is more images as well. I noticed that early on when I started doing more online training. It's like, oh, some images will really capture people's interest and attention right there. So using that. But don't overload your slide with so much information. People, when they hear things, a lot of times also they have to hear it. They then in their brain, they go from hearing what you're saying to pictures, and they visualize it. So you have to give them space to process that information. And I don't think a lot of times we give enough space for people to process that information. Take a moment to pause and ask for questions. Like a lot of times we want to just barrel through and we look at the time and we go, ah, I'm running behind. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go twice as fast. And it's like, sometimes you go, hey, you know what? Let's pause our meeting right now. I know I've got, you know, 5 more slides. Well, you know, I can send this out in a PDF, what I have here, but it seems like we're engaged. You know, we in improv, we say, improvise the scene you're in, not the one you want to be in. And I feel the same way. It's like, I have an image of what I think this presentation is going to be, but then I get in the room and that's not what it was. So I have to, can I let go of the control of what I think it's going to be? And then instead give the presentation that is. And I think that's a hard lesson for people to learn, is to give that presentation.
Yeah, I like that saying, the improvise the scene you're in. It's kind of like adapting to your environment, isn't it? And yeah. The one thing that occurs to me there is often, and I'm just as guilty of this as anyone else, you know, we do a presentation and then at the end of it, we reflect back on what happened and you think, well, I didn't do that real well, or I didn't do this, or I forgot to talk about this bit. And we don't actually celebrate that, hey, we actually adapted to what happened there, and everybody was happy and everybody took some value away. And I could tell that people took value away because somebody took action or somebody gave me feedback that said that was fantastic. And yet we kind of say, well, because we went off script, let's say, I missed this bit and I took this bit out of order, or I said this wrong, we beat ourselves up.
Well, I got a whole bunch of thoughts about that. One is, my friend says, you're shooting all over yourself. I should do this. The other is, unless you've got a time machine where you're going to go back and replay that presentation, it's wasted energy. It really is. And we forget, especially for those who do presentations, people want you to do well. They don't go into that presentation going, oh, I hope this sucks. I hope you struggle. They don't think that at all. They are like, oh, please, please don't be boring. Please don't. We don't want to see you struggle. Please. Like, they're already on your side as you go. And, you know, it's an old Jerry Seinfeld bit where he goes, you know, fear of public speaking is number one. The number two fear is death. So people would rather be in the casket than give the eulogy, which is true. And the reason is, I think it's baked into our DNA. When humans first evolved and they started walking and they were in a cave, you leave the cave and you see, you know, 10 sets of eyes on you. That's danger. Right? You're going to be attacked. So I think it's in our DNA to think when people are looking at us that it's something bad. And I say, give yourself at the end of a presentation, set a timer, 5 minutes of, if you want to sit there and replay that presentation, replay what you did at that meeting, whatever it is, set a timer. After that, see if you can let it go. You're more prepared than you think you are. Everyone is more prepared than they think they are, and they go into these situations. But the situations never go off according to plan. When has it ever happened where you went, boy, that went off exactly according to script? It never does. And so people don't realize they improvise every day of their life. Every day of your life is improv. What we're doing right now, even if you have prepared questions, it's completely improvised. you have the skill to be able to adapt and navigate that as it goes. You also can now celebrate failures and look at it as, wow, I stuttered. I forgot that section. Great. A, that's how I learn. B, I'm a human being. I'm going to make mistakes. C, if it's very important, then the next time you do that presentation or deliver that message, you're not going to forget it. So I think a lot of times we are so hard on ourselves and we don't yes and ourselves. That's the other thing. Mm. Because yes and, if you go back to the improv philosophy, it really means defer judgment. Defer judgment. And when you talk about yes and deferring judgment, it's so much harder for us to defer judgment of ourselves than it is of other people. It's a lot easier for us to yes and defer judgment of other people. But we don't value ourselves. We think we're dumb. We think we're constantly making mistakes. We also think, here's the other thing, we also think people are always focused on us. Like, and they're not. They're focused on ourselves. That's why we're in our heads all the time. We're thinking about ourselves constantly. And so that's why you're constantly running that tape in your head of what a bad job you're doing. Your brain doesn't want you to go, great work. Your brain wants to hold on to the negative, because we also have imposter syndrome. So your brain doesn't want to celebrate. Your brain has a task. And the task of your brain is survival. And so anything that doesn't go to that task, your brain doesn't like. Your brain hates improvising because it wants to know the plan. It has to know the plan. And then let's say you do something that goes according to plan, but it was a terrible failure. Your brain can go, well, at least it went according to plan. It's like, yeah, but the result was terrible. It's like, yeah, but I didn't plan. I did a gig once where I was, when I was younger, I was doing an acting job where I was dressed up like a lottery ball. And I was hired with like 10 other people, and we were in a baseball stadium in Chicago, a professional baseball stadium. They did not want to condone gambling, which the lottery was. So when we were walking around this park, we couldn't look at kids. Kids couldn't take pictures of us. And that's the only one who wants to take pictures of costume characters. And so we got done and we went back to the person in charge and said, it was a miserable failure. Like, the parents were getting angry at us because we wouldn't take pictures with their kids. But the person in charge went, no, it went great, because they had a checklist and we got out on time. We did our thing. We were out. So their checklist, they were satisfied with that, but the end result wasn't a positive thing. And so a lot of times we, you know, I have a situation now where once a week we celebrate failures. We go around, we talk about, okay, what did we fail? Because I heard somebody do that before. And I was like, that's a great thing to do, is to start teaching people, start celebrating those failures as hard as you celebrate the successes.
Hmm. Yeah, I love that. That's and one of the things that you said in that conversation was adaptability, that we adapt. And I think everyone is able to adapt in, you know, certain circumstances. I mean, if we're not able to adapt, we wouldn't survive. So we adapt our breathing, we adapt our heart rate to adjust to whatever's going on. We adapt if we're walking onto the street and suddenly there's a car rushes through the red light, we jump out of the way. So we're adapting all the time for our own survival, and we have that adaptability, so we can take that into other aspects of our life. And to me, that's a little bit of improv at work. And so we could celebrate that.
I mean, you know, do you know the term VUCA? Have you heard that term before? It's
no.
It might be originally a military acronym, but it's volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous.
VUCA. Okay, yeah.
And that is what we're living in right now. We are at the height of VUCA. Everything is volatile, complex, like uncertain, ambiguous. We're in that now. And those skills that you learn in improv, which are taught to you early on as children's games, basically. And you go, oh, this is fun and silly and things like that. But when you start learning, and what happened is students started coming to class and saying, these things actually apply to my everyday. These team thing, they make me a better listener. They make me a better grandparent. I play with my kids better. I'm more relaxed in negotiations. Like, it has changed people's lives. And it's, again, it's skills that you can have and use in your everyday, which, you know, it's these small ripples that lead to this tremendous change. And it's a matter of just constantly doing it. And if you fail at it and you forget, you know, you do it poorly, or you forget to do it, or you say no, you're okay. And you go, hey, that's all right. Next time I'm going to remember to do it. And then you just keep adding that to your skill set. And eventually that, you know, that adaptability that we're having, that agile mindset, becomes a habit. But it's not, for some people, it doesn't happen right away, because again, it's like a muscle. You can't expect to replace years of what, also the things that like you're going to replace, like the saying no or the yeah, but they might also have made you successful. And so in order to now add this other skill, it might take a little bit longer. So it's not a matter of, you know, when we talk about change also with humans, when we talk about change, the first thing we think of is something's taken from us, and we don't realize change can mean something's given to you. And that's a huge, you know, these are all mindsets that once you can change your mindset, it starts, your actions start changing. You will start seeing results for sure.
Hmm. Yeah. That's fabulous. Well, this is fantastic, Jay. I could go on talking change and adaptability and improv and lessons from improv for ages, but I'm
okay. Sounds great. That's great. I'll tell my kids.
We'll keep doing it. I'm just aware of the time. I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and there's probably a fair bit of improvisation you can do here.
There we go.
It's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I have 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some insightful answers that'll inspire our listener to go and do something awesome as a result today.
All right, I'm ready.
Yeah. So what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Well, I think you have to be, first off, open and curious. I think if you shut down ideas, if you look at things as far as, you know, how it's not going to work, you're definitely, and if we go back to the failure part, if you don't allow failure, you're never going to be innovative at all. But you have to be open and curious.
Yeah, I love that. I think curiosity is a really big thing around innovation, and even just understanding how things work. And the yes and is kind of curiosity, isn't it? Because it's yes and, I'm curious. Why did you say that? Or why do you think that? Or why do you do things that way?
How could it work? Here's an idea. How could it work? And you replace, you know, we say replace judgment with curiosity. So replace judgment with curiosity. And I had a client once who said, we want to do an opening to this show indoors with fireworks. They had seen Cirque du Soleil, and they're like, we want to do that for this national meeting. It's like, well, you can't do that. It's illegal in some places, especially where we're going to have it. You couldn't have it. So it was like, well, what do they really want? Well, they want to make a big splash. So then you go, okay, we can achieve that same thing with music. So let's bring a band in, let's bring music in. So you can replace, you can hear what they're saying and still in a way say no, but also give them what they want. But if you're not curious, like, tell me more, you're never going to get to that point. And we end up stuck in the same place as we are because we're afraid to fail.
Yeah, great. Love it. All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Honestly, surround myself with people who are smarter than I am, for sure. And bring in a team, rely on a team of people, and know what my limitations are. And then say, okay, this person does this really well. I can learn from them. This person does this well. And rely on what the team can do instead of what I can do myself. You know, you and I on a project putting our brains together, I don't have to do as much work, and we're going to come up with better ideas than if I came at this problem myself. So I think relying on a team and looking at ways that people can succeed and putting them in those positions to succeed is one way that it's helped for sure.
That's great. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean you employ people. That could be partnerships or joint ventures or all kinds of things, right? Masterminds.
For sure. It's any, you know, you have to work with other people. There's just no two ways about it. It's not just like the people who are working with you on your team, but it's also, you know, the vendors, the people outside who you're bringing in, like all of those, I think can be very helpful. Also, another thing that I've learned that's helped a lot is to leave my ego at the door. I have an ego that wants to win. I'm a scared boy who wants to win at life. And I want to get the credit. I want to be told I'm the funniest, I'm the smartest, and all of that. And I want to be told I'm the greatest, you know, facilitator, but that's all an ego thing. And an ego, my ego also tells me you can't do this. So it's all an ego thing right there. So if I can leave my ego at the door and focus outside of myself on other people, that's a huge lesson I had to learn.
Yeah, that's one of the rules that we have in some of the workshops we run is, you know, ego, leave your ego at the door. That's the way we learn here.
Yeah, we tell them, like, pick it up on the way out if you want, but it's really heavy.
All right. Now, what's a favorite resource that you use most often?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, we have this thing called the internet.
Yeah.
Any information you need. I've been reading books by Alan Alda, who was he's probably best known for as an actor, and he was on a show called MASH in the 70s. Yeah. But his background, he was a Second City actor, so his background is in improv, and he's been working on empathy, and he's been working on improv for scientists in the scientific community. And I started reading some of his books right now, and that those are great resources as far as communication goes and empathy. So I've been using that a lot, and I've been noticing because people are looking for empathy help right now. It's a huge, empathy is a big word that is seen as so important right now. So Alan Alda's work has really been inspiring, and he's really broken it down into these bite-sized pieces of information to help people understand the difference, for example, between empathy and sympathy. And a lot of times when people say empathy, you think you have to take on the other person's emotional baggage. And that's not what empathy is. And that's sympathy. Empathy means, oh, I hear what you're saying. I hear you. It doesn't mean if somebody's feeling really bad, you also have to feel bad. So I think right now that's something that immediately is what one of the resources I'm working that I've been using. And the second one I've been using, honestly, is my significant other, who is not an improviser, but we talk a lot. And when I have questions or because they're in the medical field, so they talk, I can talk to them about a lot of things, but especially like physiological things and like how the brain works. And so I think that's really fascinating because we get to the point of what's the human need. It always to me boils down to what's the human need. Once I can figure that out, I can help with solutions.
That's great. Well, I'll have to check out Alan Alda's work on empathy. I wasn't familiar with that. You know, I'd sort of known him as an actor.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you information on it. It's fascinating. Yeah. He's been doing it for decades now.
Great. Yeah. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Well, it's interesting. Sometimes we forget we're consultants and our job is to do that, right? Our job is, and that goes back to the hearing them. What are they looking for? And then presenting information in a way that they can digest as well. And sometimes that's the big stumbling block is learning how to give, whether it's feedback or information to someone in a way that they can hear it and digest it. And is it the right time to do that? And if you can figure that out, it's really easy to keep people on track. A lot of times it's like, you know, and when I first started out, when I came up in improv, oh man, some of the workshops we did were like, yes, and your way to success. And then people are like, wait, what? What does that mean? And we go, here's a zip, zap, zop. And they didn't understand any of that. But once you start understanding, okay, what we can go all these directions you're talking about, let's just revisit what our focus is. Where are we headed with this? Of course I can do that for you, but that's what we're working on is this. So I'd like to revisit that, what you're asking me for after this is done, but I want to make sure we're achieving what you want. And if you're putting it in terms, in genuine terms of, I want to help you achieve your objective, I think that always brings it back. And it's something good to check back in with them, even if they don't ask, just to check in and say, hey, I just want to touch base with you. If here's the schedule I have so far, and here's what we're doing. I just want to make sure we're on the right track.
Yeah. It's good. So it's a communication thing really, isn't it? And also the being really clear about what the goal is that they're trying to achieve and make being committed to helping them achieve that.
And honestly, can you do it? Like, do you have enough on your like, do you have the time? Do you have the bandwidth? Are you able to do that? Is that something you feel comfortable doing? Or are you accepting it out of fear of not getting work or you know, another agenda? And that's something that I can't control what you do. I can only control what I do. And that is a lesson that took me a long time to. I can't control what my partner does on stage. I just have to control what I do. And that's it.
Yeah. And that's a big lesson probably from improv as well. And I think, you know, the even thinking in today's environment and situation we find ourselves in with this pandemic is a lot of people are really frustrated, and they kind of get lost in this, well, let's control what we can control and then manage our own safety and health and business and relationships through this. But we can't actually develop a vaccine, for example, unless they're actually working in that specific field, or we can't keep other people. And finally, for the buzz round, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Oh, wow. I think you have to really know what you are and what your strengths are, and play on that more than what you can't bring to the table. And I think, you know, living up to your word, promising what you can do, you know, under promise, over deliver, that saying is great. But I think you differentiate by how you connect with other people. It's always about the relationships. And so if you can build those relationships that are based on a foundation of respect and trust and support and empathy right now, if you can build those, that's going to differentiate yourself. It's not what you do for people, it's how you make them feel. And can you make them feel valued? Can you make them feel worthwhile? Can you make them feel like they mean something? Then that's what's going to differentiate you. You know, we have emotional attachment to things. We don't need much, but we get attached to them. I have this wallet, which it's the City of Chicago flag on a wallet. And I don't need this wallet, but it's an emotional attachment for me. I have an iPhone because I love how it feels and I'm attached to it. It makes me feel like an Android might be great for some people, but it doesn't make me feel competent. It makes me feel overwhelmed. An iPhone makes it seem easier for me. So it's that emotional attachment that's going to differentiate you.
Yeah, it comes back to the understanding EQ that we were talking about a few moments ago.
Yeah, it's always that. It's always that.
This has been fabulous, Jay. Where can people learn more about you and maybe even get in touch to say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Oh, great. Thanks for asking. They can check out my website, which is todayimprov.com, todayimprov.com. I'm on LinkedIn, Jay Succo. You can check me out there. I love Facebook and I love social media. So you can find me all over social media. And it's mostly all improv, by the way, too. Like when I post things, it's a ton of improv stuff. So if you want to know more about improv, for sure, you know, check those places out.
Great. We'll have links to all of those in the show notes, so you can click straight through. All right. Now, do you have any parting advice today for our listener?
Yeah. Do one thing a week that scares you. Safety first, but we say follow the fear, it will set you free. So do something each week that scares you, because that's a way that we grow. But, you know, there's a saying, follow the fear, it will set you free. So I think everyone do something once a week that scares you.
Yeah. One of my favorite sayings is the one by Joseph Campbell that says, and this is a paraphrase of a long treatise he wrote, but the paraphrase is, in the cave you fear to enter lies the treasure that you seek.
Oh, love it. That's beautiful. I love that.
All right. Now, finally, who else do I need to get on the InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Oh, wow. Boy, there are just, you know, it's amazing. This is such a great resource for people and such a way that you boil down information very quickly, but it's such a concise way that people can get that. I would say my friend, who also is a facilitator, but her name is Jillian Bellinger. She is a tremendous, one of my favorite people to work with. We talked earlier about like how to succeed. She's someone that like I love working with. I think she's got a great innovative mindset, and she just, in my view, she gets it. So she's definitely somebody I would recommend.
All right. Well, we'll get an introduction to Jillian from you, and we'll reach out to her and see if we can find a time to have her on the show as well.
Oh, that sounds great. Oh, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on. This has been great.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing your insights today and for improvising this conversation with me. Really appreciate it. I had a lot of fun, Jay, and let's stay in touch.
Oh, always. I really appreciate it. Thanks again, and we'll be in touch, Jürgen.
I hope you enjoyed that thoroughly engaging and really informative conversation with Jay and took something away from his episode. My big takeaway idea was to suspend judgment and replace judgment with curiosity and use improvisation to learn from that curiosity. I'd love to know what you took away from Jay's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/JaySuko. That is JaySukow, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/JaySuko. You'll also find contact information there for getting in touch with Jay, as well as links to the Today Improv website, to his social media pages, and to the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. If you like this conversation, please share the episode with two other people that it might help. Tag me in on that share, and I'll reach out to you with a special surprise. Jay suggested we have a conversation with improviser and corporate trainer Jillian Bellinger on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Jillian, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Jay Suko. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including the author of Paid to Think, David Goldsmith, and co-founder of Inbox Done and Blog Mastermind, Yaro Starak. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.